G'day and welcome. This is Talking Leadership. You're here with Eric Perez, and I am fortunate to be joined by my next guest. But before we go into introductions, I'd just like to thank everyone through what's been a pretty harrowing COVID-19 period. And for those leaders, and particularly my next guest, for giving up their time at a time when COVID-19 is still doing what it's doing out in the world. So for those of you that are still feeling the effects of COVID-19, be it at a business level or be it at a personal level, I hope things get better, and they will. We just have to keep riding this thing out and hoping that there's some light at the end of the tunnel, particularly going into December, which is a particularly important part of the year for my next guest and the industry he represents, as well as those who work in my industry, which is the commercial seafood industry, which looks at December, January, and February as being critical times of the year for the purchasing of seafood. And in the interest of kicking off the podcast, can I welcome to the podcast my guest, who is a freelance consultant in the hospitality industry? I'd like to welcome Sean DeVries to the podcast. How are you, mate?
Eric, it's an absolute pleasure to be on the show. So thanks for asking
Mate, it's great to have a fellow podcaster. People can't see this obviously because it's audio, but Sean's setup is what I want to get to in the future, and he's laughing at me now, but I will get there one day. So
Absolutely.
hopefully some cashed up hippie benefactors listening to this podcast will throw some dollars my way so I can purchase some better gear. But jokes aside, Sean, look, I appreciate your time in joining me. I know that it is an interesting and challenging time for your sector. So before we get into the questions proper, can I get you to give a bit of a context in the sector you're working with, and then maybe a lead in into your work as a leader in that sector, if you could for us, please.
Yeah, sure. I think if I step back a bit, Eric, my career in industry is about 22, 23 years around about. So I started out when I was 16. I'm from Adelaide originally, South Australia. Became a baker when I was, in my early years, became a bakery owner by the time I was 21, a multi-site bakery owner when I was 26. Oh, sorry, 25. Unfortunately, had a car accident at 26, lost everything, went into liquidation, and had to start again at sort of 27, and went into QSR restaurants and worked for a brand called Grilled, which I'm sure of your Australian listeners would know, before they were sort of the cool thing that they've been the last couple of years. So sort of started with them in 2008, moved up to Brisbane and spent 5 or 6 years in Brisbane and opened up a lot of venues there. And that really got me to understand culture, running big teams, understanding customer interaction, quick service, really good produce, like all those things that are so important to me now. Yeah, lived and worked there for 5 or 6 years. Got an opportunity to go work in Perth for 6 months. I'd never been to Perth, so I ran a couple of restaurants for Grilled in Perth. That was when I really got to understand where the importance of local food and how if a market is so far away from other cities, they pretty much call themselves their own country. And Perth is just an interesting place to be, and I do love it, but it is very different to the rest of Australia. Decided I wanted to live somewhere, live and work in Melbourne, and that was about 5.5 years ago, and got an opportunity to work with the QSR brand at the time. Did that, ran a sourdough bakery brand, got into back into my bakery roots and ran a sourdough bakery brand in Melbourne for about a year, servicing wholesale and retail through three retail venues and wholesale, which sort of included Andrew McConnell restaurants, Rockpool restaurants, did it by Heston when that was still trading at Crown, and really got to understand quality product and how customers really want that and how they come back for it and the importance of brand more than anything. So it really taught me about branding. Left that, had a friend of a friend who was opening up a burger restaurant in the outskirts of Melbourne. Said, "Hey, do you want to help?" And I said, "Sure." I've opened up a lot of burger restaurants with Grilled, fortunately, and then gave a name to the brand, a consulting brand called Open Pantry Consulting, and that's for where it sort of begun. That was 4 years ago now, and that's helped allowed me to help QSR brands, cafes, bakeries, many different types of brands over that sort of 4 year period. I've worked full time for a couple of other brands in that period of time, including desserts and salad bars and stuff. So I've sort of done the full gamut from bakeries to salads to coffee to desserts, to burgers. It's been a very interesting couple of decades. Melbourne, to go back to your first part of your question, Melbourne obviously is in, over 100 days of lockdown as we tape this sort of, in November. We've come out of that for a couple of weeks. The feeling in the industry and people who are supporting the industry is really positive. It's really hopeful. I think people just have wanted to get out for a really long time. So we sort of had a couple of weeks of people, you know, trying to book places and not being able to get in because of restrictions and that kind of stuff. And just sort of easing their way back into, you know, hospitable hospitality. And as we gear up into summer with, you know, outdoor dining and CBD restaurants taking over parklets and events happening, and hopefully the Australian Open coming back and having the tennis here. I mean, there's some real hopeful, positive restaurateurs and cafe owners and hospitality owners in the industry at the moment in Melbourne. But, you know, it doesn't take much to scare it as well. And I think, you know, as we sort of take this with Adelaide going back into, you know, 7 days of lockdown, like it's, we just have to be hopeful and positive moving forward that it will return back to some kind of normality, whatever kind of normality that actually is.
That's an impressive list of different job pathways in the same industry, I guess. Mm. And I've got to ask, and maybe this is a more generic to industry as a whole, because you've probably dealt with a lot of leaders in your travels. Do you think your industry Australia-wide has fit for future leadership? Do you think the leaders in your sector are all they could be, or is that still an open question? And I don't ask it to denigrate the current leaders. In general, you know, in any industry, do we have those leaders that are ready for the future, or is there something more to be done when it comes to developing our leaders?
I think to answer the last part of your question first, there's always stuff that can be done. It definitely has improved. I suppose I can only speak about the hospitality industry because other than 3 months where I came out, decided I loved it too much and came back in, I've always done hospitality. I suppose the challenge in, you know, in a place like Australia, and I mean, this is worldwide, and with my podcast, you know, I luckily get to speak to a lot of international guests as well. And, you know, it's been run by predominantly men for a long time in our industry. And that has meant that there's been little change. If you look at the hospitality industry, like it's taken a long time for tech to come into the industry and really develop and change. You know, it's taken a pandemic for us to wake up. And that's largely because leadership has been, you know, asleep at the wheel to some point. Other than, you know, there obviously have been leaders who have come through the last couple of years and used things like tech and made sure they're training their staff right to in order to get a better result. But it's gotten better, but it hasn't moved the needle, and we haven't done enough for diversity in leadership in our industry. We haven't done enough for females in our industry. It's largely just run by men, and that's unfortunate. I think it's definitely changing. I feel like there's a movement has turned into a normality, and I'm proud to be on this side of history. To say that, you know, it's the start of something that's really going to change it. Because when you have diversity at a table, whether that be people from a different ethnicity or females at the table, or, you know, many other differences, you just get a different point of view. And a different point of view in a conversation which is mature and relaxed and making sure that everyone's accountable is only a positive thing. So, you know, I've seen directly where that's, you know, where that's been a positive thing, and have changed my leadership style over the years to make sure that I am much more open about the way that I lead people and how I've led brands as well. So I think there's definitely more to be done.
When I'm out wanting a beer or wanting to have a meal, your troops are there helping me have a good time when you're there working. And so I guess the challenge is, how do you get leadership training into that space? And I guess more to the point, what is appropriate for a 9-to-5 job when it comes to training, and how you train will be different in your sector. Does that ring true for you, Matt?
Yeah, I think if I look at the best brands that I've worked for and how leadership is sort of developed, it's done from the start, and it's a leader. It's you're leading by example. Leadership is not just one central person, it's many. And, you know, it's from the start. There's a plan in place. There's a theory around what the hell we're doing. We're not just turning up to work every day and just hoping everything's going to be okay. Like, leadership will always present itself in whatever shape or form that it is. And if you have structure around the way that you train, and you have structure around the leadership, and you're supporting those quote unquote leaders, if that's their title in the business, then you're only going to get a positive result. You know, you need to make sure, and what's really important within industry like hospitality is the fact that you're you know, giving positive reinforcement all the time. And that's not because you're dealing with a lot of, you know, a lot of a younger crew, a lot of people who have worked in their first job in hospitality, like that's a big ownership to take on. And, you know, a lot of the time I wasn't like that, right? The positive reinforcement and constant support was not something that I had signed up to until I was probably in my mid to late 20s and could understand that I needed to get the head out of my backside and make sure that I wasn't, you know, this arrogant person that I was becoming. And, you know, that really has set the foundation for a really good way that I think I now lead people, you know, and I still make mistakes, obviously, when I've been in leadership roles, but I'm able to see those mistakes sometimes, you know, before they've happened and make sure I don't recreate them all the time. So I think notoriously because the hospitality industry has been a transient one and people have sort of thought, oh, I'm going to be in the industry for, you know, 12 months while I'm doing uni or something like that. And I don't really see it as a career, means that leadership training and training in general hasn't been delivered well all the time. Like the big groups do it well, but the smaller, you know, mum and pop sort of venues or the people who've got two or three venues maybe don't have the money they think to actually deliver on quality training and leadership training and part of that. So
let me ask you something, because in the industry that I work in the commercial seafood space on a national basis, the development of leaders is sometimes, and I can understand why, falls in the context of industry bodies and industry groupings and associations that work together and identify these people either within those associations or amongst their membership or industry more broadly, even if they're not members of your association. Is that the same kind of picture in the hospitality sector or it, not really? I don't know if there's a direct comparison because of, and I'm only using a context that I'm familiar with, that
yes,
the identification and investment in leadership is a big deal for the seafood sector. And I could list off 50 reasons why, and I'm sure those reasons are mirrored in your sector, but do you have that same association grouping structure that helps you to do that?
Great question. There are a lot of associations which support the industry and largely they do a really good job. Training to some degree is part of that, but leadership is probably not the one that is done. I think there's obviously a lot of accreditation around certain roles within the hospitality industry, whether that be a barista, whether that be a chef or a cook, or something like that. And obviously there are good training providers who do front of house training and things like that. But leadership isn't really a word that, it's a really interesting question. I'm trying to think how to answer it, Eric. I think it's just not part of what we do. It's not part of language as a whole. It is from a silo perspective of venue to venue. But if we're talking about across the industry, it's definitely probably the biggest gap. Like if I went and worked for a particular restaurant and maybe they gave me excellent training, like, and then I left and then I worked for another venue, like most of those other venues wouldn't then go, oh, but you work for that great venue, so you must have great leadership training. You might have great skills, but leadership training probably isn't the thing that is top of mind or talked about often. They sort of just hire you and hope that you're going to do okay and then correct it or get rid of you if you don't.
It puts you, I think, again, this is just an outsider perspective here, and the reason for the podcasting and again, for those that are listening and are familiar with what I'm doing, the whole reason for this is to get these conversations to happen and take this for what it is, because I'm an outsider looking into what your industry does, is that it creates opportunities for people like you and others to step up and be an industry voice and maybe you enter that space of industry leadership because no one else is filling the vacuum point. And that offers opportunities for you, I guess, in your own business. That road of leadership, or in your case, I would also maybe in brackets entrepreneurship, because I think you're starting up all those businesses, shit, you've been there and lived both lives. Is it a lonely road or as lonely as you make it?
I think it's probably what you make it, right? So I think I was very lucky at the start of my career in the fact that I was employed into a brand that was the largest, like I worked with Bakes Delight when I first started, that was at a pivotal point in their timeline of business that they had great systems and processes in place, that I had the ability to train under really talented people at that time, and that I was given leadership roles because I worked bloody hard. You know, and because I presented myself at the right time, you know, leadership roles and making the next step is sort of 50% you know, hard work and 50% timing. And it was just the fact that both worked together at that point for me to get leadership roles quite early, like running, you know, bakeries at the age of 19 with, you know, sort of turnover of, you know, $550,000, $600,000 a year. Like that isn't a lot, you know, maybe in today's terms, if you talk, you know, $2 to $3 million for a turnover of a venue, but like for a bakery, that's a lot of money. And to give it to a 19-year-old when you've just paid, you know, $750,000 or whatever it was for that shop is the big risk for that person. And I think in my early stages, like I just said, you know, I remember when I bought my first bakery and I was having some challenging times and I had my staff sort of, we'd have a staff meeting every month, right? And we'd talk about stuff and obviously be me pontificating about what the hell I thought was wrong and what we need to do better and blah, 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 blah. And what we would, you know, we'd say someone did a nice thing and that was sort of the way it went. But I wasn't getting ownership from the staff. They were coming in, they were working hard. We made sure everything was good for them, but I was an asshole. Sorry to swear, but like, and I remember them getting them around a semicircle and me saying to them, like, what would be one word that would describe, you know, me? So in front of their peers, I asked them to describe what they thought about me as a leader and a boss. And most of them would go around and go, oh, hardworking, blah, 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 like there for me, blah, blah, blah. And then one said arrogant, right? One said arrogant. And I went, shit, that's pretty ballsy, you know, in front of your peers and in front of the person who pays you. And I remember pulling that person aside afterwards and really trying to be empathetic as I can. And I said, why, you know, why do you think that? And it's like, well, every time I see you, you're always tired and you're bossy. And I know you work really hard, Sean, but like, that's not the kind of, you know, place I want to come into. And you know, I know you pay me well and everything, but like I want a positive work environment when I come into work. And this was like an 18-year-old, right? Maybe 17-year-old. And it really resonated with me, right? Like this is nearly 20 years later and I still can recall it. And I, you know, tried to make sure that I wasn't arrogant anymore. And that was a hard thing for me to do. So I think to go back to your original question, I think it's as lonely as you make it. Me being a baker and working at sort of 1 o'clock in the morning or midnight and baking, and you know, you won't see the next baker till a couple of hours afterwards, and you actually are lonely because you're by yourself and you maybe don't see everyone in your business and that kind of stuff. And it's quite easy to not connect with other franchise partners or other owners because, you know, you're tired or you work 100 hours a week. Like there was a period of time I worked every single day for 3 months because if I didn't, I couldn't afford to pay my staff. That was me doing baking shifts and doing books and doing serving of customers. Like that was 100 hours a week because I had to, otherwise I would have gone broke. So that was a lot to take on. But the one thing I was trying to do, which I think was a learned behavior either from how I grew up or people that I work with or just being a male, is that you would do it all yourself and you wouldn't ask for help and you'd shut up and you just get on with it because that's what men do. They just get on with it. They don't complain. They just keep pushing forward. And then there's always a point where that creates too much tension and you blow up. And, you know, I still get to that point sometime, but thankfully for everyone around me, a lot less than I did in my 20s. You know, I've got a girlfriend now. I've had her for nearly, we've been together for nearly 3 years. And I say to her a lot, I'm glad you didn't know me in my early 20s because it wouldn't have lasted very long because I was arrogant and I wouldn't have wanted to be around me at that point, even though I was quote unquote exceeding expectations from a professional standpoint. I certainly wasn't being a good person, I think, as a whole. And I've been super critical, but if I think of myself as a leader during that time, I think I learned to be a good leader, but it was a lonely road because I made it lonely for myself. And it took me many years into my sort of early to mid 20s to sort of understand myself enough to understand who I needed to talk to in order to learn proper leadership without just trying to take everything on myself.
Mate, I appreciate the candor there. If we all shine a light on our own experiences, if you've been in leadership roles, do you think it's time served that made you a better leader, or could you have come to some of those realizations that you have now in your 20s, or did you need to have the lumps and bumps of experience to make you a better leader?
Yeah, I mean, I had obviously had a lot of quote unquote success quite early. I was quite heralded within the ranks, I suppose, because of my age. at that point and the bakery ownership. So I think I needed to go through a lot to understand it. And that's been different points of my life. And I think from sort of 19, when I was managing 40-year-olds, which was a massive challenge for me, and to come to the table and to deal with that and breed an ego where I didn't really have that before. And I think that's probably what led to the arrogance that sort of came through in my early 20s. But then, like, you know, the losing the businesses, the car accident, the having to move to another, I had to move to another state at that point, the changes in roles, the fact that I had learned a new way to lead under two completely different types of brands. Like I'm learning to lead a group of people that I have that are like family to me, but it's not, you know, so many people on a shift. Like it's, you know, a couple of people who were at the bakery at that point and that kind of stuff, to go into a full scale made in time product that you're, you know, managing anywhere between sort of 6 people to 15 people on a shift, plus a crowd of, you know, 200 or 300 people. It was a big challenge for me. So it was just trying to be self-aware enough to understand what leadership I needed to present. Because, you know, when you go from managing, I would say that the hospitality industry is one of the hardest industries in which to lead and manage people, because you are leading people who are 14, 15, 16, first jobs, which is so important, because I'm sure you remember your first job. I certainly remember my first job. Like, I don't want to be the boss that everyone hates from their first job, you know? Like that's a big thing. You're leading people who are often from other countries. And that's why we have a critical shortage at the moment in Australia, because the industry's come back and all of our foreign, you know, students are not here, and all of our, you know, visa holders are not here. They're back home. So we've got issues there. So you're leading with, you know, people with different ethnicities and different ways of working and communicating. People who maybe have had some hard knocks, have maybe done some time, have come back into, you know, something like the hospitality industry from some structure and some compliance. And like, you know, you're dealing with people who unfortunately have, you know, mental health issues and challenges around that are hard to manage. That is a challenge to manage for someone who is usually in their early 20s to late 20s as their first kind of management job. Like that is a challenge to manage. Running a team which can change all the time, and people's emotions can change. It's not like, you know, another industry where you sort of come in to get a qualification across the board in order to make sure you can do the job. Like obviously you've got chefs and baristas who have qualifications, but there are a hell of a lot of people who just come in and work and do the grind. If you're, you know, developing young leaders with inside venues, whether they be restaurants, cafes, bakeries, whatnot, the leader above those young leaders needs to be really sound and needs to be very patient and very empathetic in order to deliver quality training and listening to what those issues are of that young leader in order for them to develop in their career. I was lucky enough to have that. So that's what I've always tried to, you know, impart on people that I've, you know, I've managed as a whole.
Yeah. And again, that would make sense in the context in which you work, mate. So I've got a million questions I could ask about your industry experiences. Just to conclude the podcast, mate, and this is one that I often ask as a bit of a hindcasting exercise. If you could speak to a 18, 19-year-old Sean and go back and give them some advice, what would you give them about being a more effective leader?
I'd probably say listen more than talk. And I think for myself, with, you know, little self-confidence until probably the time I was 16 or 17 and really struggling with bullying and a lot of demons and stuff, when I started to do well in hospitality, like it went to my head. And I thought part of that was the fact that I had to be, you know, going back to what I said before, I had to be the man, and I had to be the one who was, you know, leading everyone through and pushing everyone through the hard times. But I wasn't listening as much to what my staff needed from me as a leader. I was just telling them what a leader should be. And so that was probably the most important thing. I think I would have had a lot of an easier ride, and it would have made me a better leader quicker. Yeah, so that's probably what I'd say to myself.
Not a worry, mate. Look, this has been a hell of an interesting podcast, and I'd like to offer you the opportunity to come back in the future, because I want to get some more panel discussions around this with people in similar industry sector. So I'll reach out like I do with all previous guests, and it'd be great to keep chatting to you, mate, because it appears to me, as just a final comment from me, that in your industry, like in some other industries, and tech seems to come to mind, that you guys produce entrepreneurs like it's going out of fashion, people that will give a shot to doing something that someone else hasn't done, you know, start a business, employ people. It is a big deal, because governments don't create jobs. People like you and people in your industry are the ones that create jobs, and that's a I think a good positive message to send out. So governments, give us a chance to create some more jobs, and don't undercut us, and try to support us if you can. So for those listening, I've been speaking to Sean DeVries. Mate, thank you for your time. I appreciate it. I know that you're busy. And as always, for those listening, this has been Talking Leadership. Thank you for your time, and we'll catch you all on the next podcast.